official K-1 podcast, K-1 Battlecast. You'll get news, fight reviews, and fighter interviews. And now, your hosts, Michael Shaverov and Jonathan Scheer.
It's good night, Iran!
Welcome back to K1 Battlecast, everyone. This week, we're going to continue our series on Giorgio Petrosian's historic back-to-back victories in 2009-2010. And we're breaking down each one of the fights that took place in this tournament. So far in the series, we've covered quarterfinals 1 and 2 with our first peek at the K1 World Max 2010 finals, covering Mike Zambidis and his win against cosplaying fighter Jienotsu Nagashima. And last week, we covered Petrosian's lopsided victory for the second year in a row over 2002 K1 World Max champion Albert Krauss. This week, we go into the third quarterfinal, which took place between Gago Drago, an Armenian fighter who fights out of the Netherlands, and Dutch-Moroccan fighter Mohamed Kamal. So let's get into it. By the way, if you've missed it, we covered Gago Drago's history with K1 in episodes 19 and 20. And we even had a great interview with the Armenian fighter. So if you get a chance, please give those episodes a listen. And if you've already heard them, why not revisit them? Michael had a hilarious way of describing Drago as the kind of guy whose elevator doesn't go all the way to the top. And it really highlights how fanatically committed Gago Drago was to going all out in every single fight he was in. Among all the K1 World Max fighters, Gago Drago's presence brought this incredible energy to the fans, especially when he made his entrance, because fans would get so excited. And I also appreciated that about him, because not all fighters can do that. Some of the newer fighters, they're kind of overwhelmed by the experience, and obviously they just want to do well in the fight, so that's what they've put their full focus on. But someone like Gago Drago, who by the time this fight happens that we're going to talk about today, he'd had close to 70 fights under his belt, very experienced, and he knew how to really get the crowd hyped up. Now, to set the stage for the K1 World Max 2010 final, we've already said this, but it was structured a bit differently than in previous years. The final 16 was split into two events, one that was held in Tokyo on July 5th, and the other that took place in Seoul on October 3rd, and that took place in Seoul, Korea. But that's not all. The Seoul event was actually a two-day event. That's right, you heard it. 2 days. One was for K1 World Max on October 3rd, but the day before that featured the final 16 for the 2010 World Grand Prix, which included fighters like Jerome LeBanner, Peter Ertz, Ray Sefo, who stepped in as a replacement for Ruslan Karev. And there were a ton of great fights on that night, which we might dive to in a future episode. But for now, it's just suffice to say that two straight days of K1 madness took place that October. And at the final 16 for the K1 World Max, Gago Drago faced off against South Korean fighter Soo Hwan Lee, while Mohamed Kamal took on the young up-and-coming Ukrainian fighter Artur Kushenko. So let's first get into the showdown between Gago Drago and Soo Hwan Lee. Despite Gago Drago's impressive stoppage record, he'd been on a dry period for KOs going into this qualifying fight, having scored only one in his last 10 fights. But looking back at the beginning of Drago's fight career, his fights were characterized by a brutal aggression. Up until his 20th fight, Drago's KO ratio hovered around 70%. And until his 30th fight, he had a KO ratio of 66%. But by his 40th fight, this dropped to a little more than 61%, and when you get to his 68th fight with Lee, it has dropped to around 47%. Gago Drago was someone who either knocked the fight completely out of you or completely demoralized your corner. He's had 5 corner stoppages, or he convinced the doctor that it was in your best long-term interest to let you quit while you were ahead. He's had 3 doctor stoppages. So just this really aggressive fighter. Lee Soo Hwang, on the other hand, is a southpaw fighter from South Korea who is a bit of a stepping stone for fighters such as Gago Drago, or has actually proven to be a bit of a stepping stone for Gago Drago, as well as Artur Kushenko, who is going to be in the next fight that we cover today, that Kamal had against. But just to suffice to say, he was a bit of a journeyman, and he proved to be a test for a lot of up-and-comers. So that was the situation that Gago Drago found himself in this fight against Li Suhuang. And Li is very sharp from the get-go of their qualifying round. He kicks with these thunderous cracks each time he lands his middle and low kicks, and these huge popping thuds from his sharp hands. But gotta give it to Drago. He shelled up and he weathered the leather, and he ate a bunch of low kicks and then continued to press forward to land these punishing hooks of his own. And Drago's kicks, he wasn't able to really connect with them very well in the beginning. There was one point where he tries to kick Suhuan Li in the head, and Suhuan Li pulls this matrix-like dodge, watches it just whiz by with the calmest of demeanors. He's really, really doing well and keeping good distance from Drago in the beginning and really fighting his own game. But then Drago just, he presses forward and he hunts for the body and Suhuan Li's head. And with about 20 seconds left in the first round, Drago corners Li and he launches this blitz on the South Korean's head, staggering him with a straight right that lands to the temple, and then hounding him around the ropes with savage hooks for about 8 seconds. And one of them just connects with Lee's gut, and you can see this ripple of shock reverberate through his body. And then the hands drop from that impact, and Drago falls with this massive looping left that dumps Li to the canvas, and with seconds left in the round, and Li like shakes himself up and he takes a deep breath and somehow is saved by the bell. Now during the break, Li seemed to recover somewhat, and he comes out again in the second round and he's launching these huge bombs of middle kicks, and he's in southpaw, so he's using his left leg. And while Li was able to beat the bell in the first round, he would not be that fortunate in the second round, because Drago came hunting early and connected with Li with with knees and middle kicks. And the crowd at one point, I think Drago landed a head kick, and just the crowd erupted in cheers. And finally, at the end of the second round, Drago traps Li again, and it's just seconds before the bell. And this time, with only 12 seconds left in the second round, Gago Drago's inexorable assault isekais his opponent with this crazy high right kick out of nowhere. And sadly, Li had to be taken from the ring in a stretcher, which is never a good thing to see. But with the only KO in the final 16 and one of the only two KOs in the whole tournament, Drago had made it through to the final 8. As for Gago Drago's opponent in the quarterfinal, Muhammad Kamal, he would go up against Artur Kashenko in the final 16. And I remember almost not being able to process the outcome of this fight because it was just so unexpected to me. First of all, because Muhammad Kamal at 5'2", 157 centimeters, is one of the shortest fighters in K1 World Max history. I want to say that he's the shortest, but I'm not entirely sure. I mean, there's a lot of people to look through, and I did find a few, though, including Chahid Olad El Hajj, who comes in at 170 centimeters. There's Reid Nakajima, who you may know as the boxer who lost in spectacular fashion to Viktor Akimov via that spinning back fist this March in the 2024 qualifying round. Does anyone remember that? But he also ties with Iron Mike Zambitis at 167 centimeters. So both Rei Nakajima is 167, as is Mike Zambitis, who fought against Chahid Olad El Hajj. Well, Muhammad Kamal is 157 centimeters, and I'm pretty sure he's the shortest fighter in K1 history. I don't know that for sure, but if anyone finds somebody shorter than that who fought in K1 World Max at 70 kilograms and under, please send me that information. I would love to hear it. Okay, so you're going to be hard-pressed to find a shorter fighter in the welterweight category, that's for sure. And the only other person I could find in the welterweight category, which is 70 kilograms and under, is Hector Sandoval, who fights with the UFC. So a different organization and a different time. So we might as well be talking about, I don't know, something entirely different, that's for sure. So the difference in height between Mohamed Kamal and Artur Kashenko is about 23 centimeters because Artur comes in at 180 centimeters. So that's a 23 centimeter difference. And Artur Kashenko, of course, is a native of the Ukraine who made his first appearance in the K1 World Max Finals in 2006 as a reserve fighter, and he earned his own return ticket to the 2007 K1 World Max Finals when he himself defeated Su Huan Lee. So it's interesting, again, to see that Su Huan Lee acts as a bit of a gatekeeper. Kashenko, of course, has had numerous victories over top-level K1 fighters, including Mike Zambitis, also Jordan Tai, Yasuhiro Kido, Andy Sauer, and Murat Direki. And I'm not sure where he got the inspiration for his pre-fight ensemble, but Artur Kashenko also kind of came out looking like a welterweight version of Peter Ertz, in my opinion. He had this sleeveless plaid shirt on, and he wore this hat. Although he didn't have the same killer power as Ertz, who has a career record of 75% KOs, but out of Kashenko's first 10 victories, 8 came by way of KO. So at least when he first came on the scene, he was keeping pace with Mr. K1 himself. Now, this is a great fight between Artur Kashenko and Mohamed Kamal, and I highly recommend doing a search for it because I feel like it's a masterclass for fighters who go up against a much larger opponent on how to fend them off. Kashenko came out looking supremely confident, and he applied pressure early in this fight, doing a series of roundhouse kick feints off of his front leg and maneuvering with these slight jerking motions to get Kamal to react. Kashenko had Kamal pushed all the way back to the ropes, and then he made his move. Back in these days, K1 allowed way more freedom with catching the leg. So as Kashenko finally releases his front leg kick, Kamal grabs it, and within millisecond, he bull rushes into Kashenko and almost headbutts him, but of course to Kashenko's shoulder because he's much shorter. And then he throws these hooks, which hit flush on Kashenko's guard, but he's been put on notice. And Kashenko goes for another kick off the front leg, this time a front kick, and bam, Kamal catches it again and in a split second throws a left hook followed by a rear leg roundhouse that digs deep into Kashenko's thigh. Now, interestingly to me, because the difference in his height, Kamal is positioned perfectly to throw these low kicks because he can whip out at what should probably be a middle kick to anyone else who would be his height, but it lands on his opponent's thigh, not his hip or rib cage. And Kashenko jerks with this pain as it hits, and he tries again to use the timing of a fake to throw Kamal with his lead leg roundhouse kick. But Kamal grabs it again, and bam, another low kick to the thigh. Then when Kashenko resets, because you can see his shoulders kind of rising and falling just briefly as you see him kind of shake off the shock of the blow, and then on this counterbeat, Kamal reads Kashenko's timing to launch this vicious kick to the inside of Kashenko's knee, and you can see this grimace just come over Kashenko's face. So clearly, Kamal was doing a ton of damage to Kashenko. And I don't really want to go into the full 9 minutes of this fight because basically I can sum it up as one exchange after another where Kamal, this zippy little roadrunner, just blast Kashenko's ribcage with these left-handed hooks and these rear leg roundhouse kicks to Kashenko's legs, and that Ukrainian could just not find an answer. Kashenko outweighed Kamal by 2 kilograms and out-heighted him by 23 centimeters. If Kashenko hadn't been as aggressive, I feel like he should have had this huge advantage, just taking his time and you know, attacked where he found openings. But Kamal used Kashenko's aggression against him, counterfighting him from the get-go and outpacing Kashenko for probably 8 out of the 9 minutes. The only real momentum that Kashenko managed to get was at the start of the third round when he was throwing off Kamal's timing with a jab followed by a cross combo and this rear leg roundhouse kick instead of using his front leg. And he got him to kind of put up his guard a couple of times, and then he would do this front leg roundhouse kick. And I think Kamal might have been flagging a bit. Then Kamal ups the pace with 2 minutes left, and it is one-way traffic in favor of Kamal the whole rest of the fight. So basically 8 out of 9 minutes of this entire fight has been dominated by Kamal. And I was shocked because I was so sure that Kashenko would do better. And I think he was too. I think he was shocked because after the fight, there was this really funny moment where the rising star of Ukraine, Bilibilka, the white rabbit Artur Kashenko, made good on his nickname and bolted from the ring almost before the decision was handed to Kamal. And when the decision was announced, the camera goes over to Kamal and to his corner as they celebrate the win. And there's this brief moment after about 10 seconds of them just like, you know, celebrating where Kamal realizes, and you can kind of see it on his face, maybe I should say something to my opponent and thank him for the fight. And the camera follows a little bit ahead of him, but poof, there's no Kashenko. And there's this funny moment where the camera almost has to send out a search party to find Kashenko. It does this slight swiveling motion as if the cameraman is like, desperate to find Kashenko. They end up switching to a camera that shows outside the ring, and Kashenko's already in the crowd and he's on his way back to the locker room. So that was a humorous moment in television history. And I don't really mean to gloss over the fight, but it was such an unexpected beatdown in favor of Kamal, and it pretty much was the same thing from start to finish. And Kamal just got ahead of Kashenko's pace the whole time, and there was very little that Kashenko could do. He hardly landed a punch. And with that, Mohammed Kamal makes it to the final eight. And this is where we're going to talk about the quarterfinal showdown between Gago Drago and Mohammed Kamal. When Gago Drago met Mohammed Kamal in the ring, Drago was the far more experienced fighter among the two, with 69 professional fights, compared to Mohammed Kamal's 31. At this point of Gago Drago's career, he had faced and had wins against K-1 greats such as Kohiru Imaki, Albert Krauss, Ole Larsen, and Warren Stevelmans. And although he had lost by decision, he had taken Buakaw, Masato, and Yoshihiro Sato the distance. And he even took Mike Zambitis into an extra round. So he had had quite a great deal of success against K-1 greats. Early into the first round in their fight, Gago Drago applies a bunch of pressure to Mohammed Kamal. And unlike Kashenko, Drago uses his rear leg to drive into his opponent. So Kamal can't counter by grabbing that lead leg and then phasing into range like he did in the qualifying round. Oddly, Kamal also tries to do step-up knees against Drago, who is 18 centimeters taller at 175 centimeters. And they're not effective when given the strict rules against clinching in K1, so that tactic really doesn't bear fruit for Kamal. Kamal has these beautiful lead hand hooks off his left hand to the head and body that really remind me a lot of what Kasper Mozynski has been doing in the ring. But unfortunately for Kamal, Drago's shell is hard and the hooks don't break through. Drago keeps his distance and is able to use his jabs to great effect, which makes sense given the height difference. And Drago wants to keep Kamal from getting too close on the inside and to put him at a distance that is going to favor Drago's taller frame. Again, Kamal tries a knee, and this time a step-up one, which Drago answers with his own knee. And rather than favor his kicks, Drago decides to box a bit. He weaves in and hits with punches and just shifts out of range of Kamal's responses before shifting back in to use his powerful right cross. Then bam, a low kick at the 2 minute mark stops the fight until Kamal can readjust the package. And the look that Drago gave him when he hit him a little bit below the belt was rather amusing. I hate to you know, laugh at other people's pain. But Drago gives this kind of, I don't know, come on, man, I didn't hit you that hard look. And then the action resumes about 30 seconds later. So it couldn't have been too flush on the money. The two fighters touch gloves and then the match resumes. The pace of this showdown is totally different than either of the two matches these fighters had while qualifying. For one thing, because Drago boxes more than Kishenko against Kamal, which allows Drago to dictate the timing of their exchanges in a completely different manner. And because of this, Kamal is not using his hook to low kick combination against Drago like he did against Kishenko, because Drago counters with his own low kick every time. He just waits until Kamal's foot kisses the canvas and then unloads with all of his considerable might. Each time Kamal tries to come in with punches, Drago shells up and completely stifles Kamal's attack. There's this exquisite exchange with around 1:44 on the clock where Drago throws a massive right hook and the shorter fighter ducks to land his own hook to Drago's ribs. Drago does a stutter step out of southpaw to land a sick inside thigh kick, so it was as if whatever Kamal hit him with, Drago had a response. Close to the 1:30 second mark after Drago sneaks into range when Kamal raises his guard, Drago throws a mean roundhouse kick to Kamal's right thigh, and Kamal counters with this amazing six-shot combination that, again, I could swear I've seen Muzhinsky throw. And he just hooks off the lead hand to the head, fakes a cross, then goes to the head, liver, head, low kick. And after he sets his back leg down, he jabs, followed by a right cross. All but the low kick bouncing off Drago's impenetrable guard. As strong as his offense can be, you've got to hand it to Drago. His guard is amazing. And once Kamal had spent his momentum, it was Drago who was now setting the pace, baiting Kamal to hit and then countering off his guard, pushing forward, always pushing forward. Kamal switches briefly to southpaw on the back foot and Drago nails Kamal with the wicked inside thigh kick again. And the way Drago pushes, he just raises his foot as if he's about to come in with a front leg roundhouse kick or maybe just to feint, and then he pushes in, then launches off the offbeat. He does all these different timings that make it so difficult for his opponent to catch what's coming. And it was just really impossible for Kamal to tell whether Drago was going in for a roundhouse off the front leg, or he was going to throw a middle kick, or was he going to throw a high kick, come in low, or if it was just another one of his feints. And I'm pretty sure that by this time, Kamal's nerves had been completely loaded by Drago until pretty much the end of the first round. But to his credit, Kamal kept trying, and he countered from southpaw with a roundhouse kick, and when Drago came in, he'd followed up with a step-up knee, and just because he was the shorter fighter, it just kept missing. And also because he kept ending up in southpaw when Drago was pushing forward, it would open up Kamal to multiple inside thigh kicks, which Drago was only happy to keep punishing. And whenever Kamal would try to counter, Drago would weather it out, then counter, rinse, and repeat. Now, despite how frustrating this fight must have been for Kamal, it was really fun to watch. And there's so many exchanges where you just see both fighters, they're throwing punches, they're blocking, they're countering, they're using second phase and changing up their tempo. It's really technical, and these two just try with all their might to find that code that's going to crack their opponent's defense. The first round ends and the two fighters head back to the corners, and both are breathing relatively easy and they're listening to instructions intently. And there was this amusing moment when they both come out at towards the start of the second round where they're just so ready to get back into it that they touch gloves, and instead of kind of backing up to an arm's length distance, you know, the referee gets in between and pushes them both, they wanted to stay within striking distance, almost at the bell, and the ref had to spend about 10 seconds to push them apart, and then the round kicks off again. They must have really just wanted to get back in there. And the second round is where I felt that Drago's height advantage really started to matter. After each exchange, Drago was able to push Kamal back, and still Kamal tries to use his knee. But because Drago can push back from above, Kamala's off balance, and he ends up spilling back to the canvas more than once this round. And again, because of the height advantage, Drago's able to come in with both forearms up, and then he starts to body Kamala around the ring because he's able to get in close enough where he can push him back and always keep Kamal off balance. And now, because it's Drago's distance that's being established, his kicks are landing more effectively in this round, and he's kicking off the back leg when he comes in and mixing it in with knees off the back leg. And then when Kamal pushes forward, he starts kicking off of his front foot. And it's really something to behold how many different attacking patterns Drago puts together in this fight. And when he's completely established his range, that's when Drago starts to throw these massive right cross jab combos followed by step up knees, which start to hit home. And the thing that was interesting to me is that Drago doesn't really have the highest work rate. He doesn't throw the most complicated combinations, but he throws hard. And you may remember our interview with Andy Sauer, where he talks about fighting Gago Drago and just saying he could not believe how hard Gago Drago hit. Even though Sauer won that fight, he paid a price. The pace starts to take its toll on Drago's stamina, and he begins to lose balance, falling to the canvas a couple times. But it's also taking a toll on Kamal, and with 34 seconds in the second round, Drago scores his first down. Drago's relentless attack on Kamal has pushed the Moroccan into the corner, and right when the shorter fighter tries to counter with a right hook, Drago comes over the top with a left hook that drops Kamal. Kamal tries to protest, "Hey, I just slipped," but from the angle we first see it, there's no way that it looks like a slip. And with that, round two is over. I really had to look at the replay numerous times, from the reverse angle, which was over Drago's shoulder, and then back again from the first angle that you see it from. And from the first angle, when you look at it again, it looks like it could have just slipped by him, because Kamal did protest it. But I think it was obvious that it struck at the moment. But then, okay, you look at the reverse angle, doesn't look like you hit him. Then you look at it from the regular angle again, and even though Kamal has kind of turned his head to avoid the brunt of the blow, it hit precisely in the right place on Kamal's temple. And then you see the original angle, and you can then notice the impact more visibly because you see it in the reverse angle. So I really do think that this one hit Kamal. And as the third round is ready to begin, Drago again is waiting impatiently in the center ring, while this time Kamal's second has yet to leave the ring. The second finally gets out, and again, Drago has to be pushed back by the ref, and he must sense that he's so close to the win, and it's almost all he can do to wait for the bell. The third round begins, and Kamal comes out swinging, trying to match Drago's momentum, match his pace with his own. And while Kamal lands some great hooks to the body, launching from both sides, Kamal tries to follow with a knee from what I can only think must be a force of habit. And at that moment, Drago knocks him down with a straight right. In looking at the footage, I got to agree with the diminutive Dutch fighter that it was clearly a slip, but that's not how it was scored, and it was paid a down. And so Drago, given the fact that he probably won the first round, he definitely won the second round, he was probably winning the third round. Unless Kamal could knock him out, it was going to be a loss. And clearly Kamal wasn't happy, but he was able to really turn it around quickly. I gotta throw respect where respect is due, because Kamal just he protested, and then he's had to fight the fight in front of him. And you can see it kind of wearing on people sometimes when it doesn't go their way. They get angry, or they get it just affects their motivation in the fight. But he, gotta give it to him. He just put it behind him, and he started focusing on the task right in front of him, which was make it through the third round. There was still 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. So the next minute is all Drago, and each time Kamal tries to throw his hooks. Gago counters with his hooks, or he shells up, and he's frustrating every single attempt by Kamal to gain any kind of footing. But Kamal is enduring the punishment, and the punishment is constant, and the assault is clearly starting to take a toll on Drago, whose fight style has typically favored one-off matches over tournaments. And like Zambitis' fight against Nagashima, you've really got to wonder how burning his stamina reserves in the quarterfinal fight is going to hurt his chances going forward. At around the 42nd mark, Drago bloodies Kamal's nose, and though breathing hard, Kamal still comes forward, trying with all of his might to land something, anything, that will finish the stubborn Armenian fighter. But the fight ends without a single break from action from start to finish, going to decision. And since Drago's been paid two knockdowns, there is not a person around who's surprised with Drago that he moves on to the semifinal, winning by unanimous decision. And unfortunately for Drago, this would be his last win for almost two long years. And I'm really not sure about the reasons. Maybe he got injured. I'll try to look into it in the coming weeks. But I'm sorry to say that this was the last fight that Drago won for almost 2 years. But this fight was a testament to Drago's fortitude, his amazing defensive skills, and his incredible strength. I hope you've been enjoying this journey with me, and although this tournament is not a KO fest like some of the tournaments in K1 history, each fight I watch shows how technical the K1 World Max fighters can be. I gotta admit, I really didn't realize that I liked fights like this until watching this series, but it's given me a much better appreciation for the extreme technical skill that these fighters possess, and it has been a lot of fun to look into the road that each one of these fighters has taken to get to this point in their careers. Well, that's gonna do it for this week's show. Please join us next time as we break down the lead up to Yoshihiro Sato's fight against another Polish powerhouse from K1 history. Not Kasper Mazinski this time. Michal Glogowski will also give you all the details from K1 World Grand Prix 2024 in Brasilia, our heavyweight tournament that is just about to take place in Brazil, and hopefully we'll have all the details for you the next time that we meet. But until then, I'm wishing you all a fantastic week.